Hi, I'm Mike with Strong Fathers, Strong Families.
And I'm Lindsay with Parents as Teachers National Center.
And you're listening to Intentional Partnerships.
We are here today with Christina Hodgkinson and Jill Spillman of the Akron Metropolitan Housing Authority.
So housing authority, that's a little different when we think about family engagement.
It is. And they're doing some really cool work to engage families within their organization in a way that is not where you typically think of engaging families.
But they have families that need to be engaged, and I'm looking forward to hearing what she has to say.
So welcome, Christina and Jill. If you guys just want to take a second and kind of tell us about who you are and what your work entails.
I'm Christina Hodgkinson, and I am the Director of Resident Services at the Housing Authority, which basically means that I oversee all of the community partnerships, the funding for programming, our staff that are going and working with our residents, living in public housing and providing services and referrals. That's just a real quick way of saying kind of what my role at the Housing Authority is.
And my name's Jill Spillman. I am the Educational Initiative Supervisor, so I oversee all of our educational programming here at the Housing Authority. The majority of that work includes overseeing our Early Childhood Initiative Program, which is where we do our parents as teachers home visit.
I want to start by exploring a little bit this idea of family engagement within a housing authority, because that's not standardly where we talk about family engagement. A lot of this conversation is happening around education and schools. I mean, I think it's really cool that there's this work is expanding past just where we traditionally think about working with families. So can you guys talk about kind of how your programming got started within the Housing Authority, how you got where you are?
Well, it was around 2007, I believe, where our community was starting to really get interested in the importance of early childhood education. And at that particular point, the Housing Authority was working with United Way and a local donor that wanted us to start just working with little workshops or classes with moms and their kids. And it just continued to evolve, and the community identified the importance and the access that we did have to low-income individuals and families to be able to deliver such services and programming to hopefully make an impact in that area. The Housing Authority currently has over 3,300 children under the age of 5 living within our county. And so we have a pretty big amount of children that we have the opportunity to impact through social and emotional development and helping the parents be their teachers first and most important teacher. So that's really kind of how we started getting into it. It evolved, and here we are 11 years later and have expanded, being recognized locally for the work that we are doing in a housing authority, because it isn't a traditional type of a program that a housing authority would get engaged in. But we felt that it was really important to invest in early childhood programming to help start to break the cycle of generational poverty.
When you guys look at, which again, this makes so much sense. You know, it's like, oh, really? Wow, you have all these families that have children. What if you worked with them? But you guys, you know, instead of waiting for an outside partner, have become, you know, the impetus for this. So we all know what you're trying to do with education, but how does that tie back to some of the goals or some of the standards that are set for housing communities in general? In other words, we know that by educating kids, you know what you're doing with that. But for a housing authority that says, but I have these goals to meet, how have you seen that those efforts with families and young children kind of help you meet some of those goals? Has that been part of the discussion?
Well, for housing authorities in general, most housing authorities do more than just be housers. They really do believe that you can't just house individuals or families without providing some type of a service that relates to, and it's usually primarily economic independence, which ultimately would help support improving the family's income to ultimately move out of public housing or out of subsidized housing into market rent or home ownership. Our housing authority, because of the overwhelmingly interest community-wide, has adopted the importance of education and services outside of the traditional just providing a place to live. It's part of our strategic plan as an organization, and so we take it very seriously. Originally, when we started in this area, you know, there really wasn't much in the community that was doing home visitation type programming to help support families with young children. And so we felt that we wanted to invest in that. And when I say invest, I don't mean that the housing authority directly pays for the services. All of our funding to be able to provide these services to our residents come from local foundations, grants, and put in some banks. And so when I say that our community wholeheartedly embraces the importance of providing a good early learning experience, they really are putting the money where their mouth is.
And that's an awesome testament to the work that you guys are doing as well. Because not only, you know, when we think about engaging families in doing this work, but to get money for that is very difficult. And so being able to say, yes, these organizations not only believe in the mission, but also like trust us to provide that mission, I think is really, really a testament to the work that you guys are doing.
Yes, we are extremely grateful. You know, our staff work really hard. And when it comes to family engagement, we work really hard in building relationships first, trusting relationships first. And that's how we're really getting some good outcomes, because our staff really truly care about the families and these and the young children and believe in the program. And Parents as Teachers has allowed us to really put together an evidence-based program that is recognized locally in our community, that we are getting results, and it is a way to really impact our families.
So talk to us about how, when you began to develop this program, was it embraced by the families, or because you, like you said, housing authority, there's part of a system there that sometimes is good, sometimes is bad. So how did the families embrace it? How did you guys begin to build that trust in your families?
So the housing authority, our families are not, it wasn't necessarily new to have engaging families into services at the very beginning, because we've always had some type of a service coordination program to where we have social workers or other professionals going in and working with families, whether it's in a crisis situation or not. So we've always had a service department. The difference is when we have service coordinators, they're few and far in between for multiple buildings. So the housing authority has over 5,000 units of public housing alone. And so for that, there were only at the time three service coordinators that were really supporting all of those families or individuals that were in need of service coordination. What was so important about the early childhood programming, where I feel just even better at what we're doing, is seeing that, you know, the one-on-one relationships and the importance of taking the time to be with the family one-on-one more than just during a crisis situation. And so that's what I feel the early childhood programming and the home visitors have actually brought to the table, is having that target and that focus to be able to work with the families one-on-one, build those trusting relationships. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when the child moves on out of and graduates from the Parents as Teachers program, you know, sometimes it's hard for our home visitors to let go of that family, to transition them to a service coordinator who will continue working with that family on their journey, because they've just built such a deep trusting relationship, and they trust one another.
You know, these relationships are the basis of so much in our ability to help families be successful. And have you seen those relationships that have been built impact your families as they grow out into other service areas? It's like, do you see the families beginning to engage in different places in different ways because they have this relationship with this one person? They're starting to trust the organization as a whole?
Absolutely. I really do feel once the family has that individual who has built trust and recognizing that the system is okay, we do see that the families are, you know, when we're making referrals for them, that they are engaging in other supportive services, whether it's within the housing authority or outside of the housing authority in a different type of a system, whether it's a mental health system, whether it's the public benefit system. They do tend to, because of the trust with their home visitor, begin to engage in those services. Sometimes we do have families who are engaged in multiple programs at the housing authority, But that may not have happened if it wasn't for that start of that relationship surrounding their child. The other thing too is we as a housing authority have also really worked hard the last 4 years to ensure that property management and our home visitors and service coordinators are working hand in hand, and that they are cross training with one another. You know, if we're out in the homes as a home visitor, building those relationships and, you know, talking about the actual system and lease compliance and all of those things that they, our residents, are supposed to comply with as part of their lease, that when the property manager comes out for, say, a housekeeping inspection, there's not a wall built up because they feel that if their home visitor trusts that property manager, they should too.
I think that just, again, is so important to show. One of the things that we talk about here when we talk about family engagement and why we're even talking about it at parents as teachers in this early childhood realm, our hope is that if we can start to engage families in these early years and support them in developing skills to engage with others, and then it becomes this pattern of engagement and to do things like be able to reach out and advocate for themselves in different spheres and spaces, so that also then when they get to school and are working with programs that Mike and Strong Fathers and Strong Families are working with, that they then have set up a pattern of engagement that really can support their child in being successful.
So what are ways you guys have seen your families, because you talk about as they pass from home visiting and those direct relationships, what have you guys either done or seen that helps those families transition into public schools, you know, or pre-K programs and then kindergarten programs? Because we know schools sometimes struggle with that engagement. And you've got this such a close relationship with this person that has, you know, basically helped you and cared for you. And now we're putting you into the big building with 300, 500, 700 kids. What are ways that you guys have seen that transition work? And what are some of the challenges of that?
Well, here in Summit County, we're lucky to have two initiatives that really help us through the kindergarten transition process. One of which is Summit County First Things First and the Summit Education Initiative. And them working together, they have created a tool that we use called the Transition Skills Summary. And that is completed in the early spring prior to a child entering kindergarten. Those results then kind of display any areas of concern and areas of strength that can be shared with the family so that the family can work on some of the areas that could use some improvement. Those results are also shared with the school that the child will be entering in the fall. So that helps with the building of classrooms. So the schools love it, the principals love it, because they just know more about the children coming into their classrooms.
And how have you seen that help families do that? You know, how does that help your families as they're making that transition?
I think it helps prepare them. It makes them think about what's coming up. One of the biggest challenges is just seeing what their child needs to know once they enter kindergarten. Mm-hmm. Some people think it's just tying your shoes, but there's so much more. The schools are telling us they're getting children who aren't ready to sit down and listen for more than 2 minutes. They aren't ready to stand in line. I think the parents appreciate being able to see what they can work on in the few months prior to their child entering.
So we've been talking a lot about engaging families one-on-one and kind of how that works in their home visiting. But so I'm wondering if you guys have processes or if you've thought about processes to engage parents more at the programmatic level, like in decision-making or on advocacy boards or planning groups or things like that.
Yeah, in addition to the annual parent satisfaction survey that we use to kind of make some programmatic decisions, we've also added a participant to our Early Childhood Initiative Advisory Board. So she comes to meetings and can give her perspective on how things are going or give us ideas on what could be changed, what's working, what's not working. We also have a past participant that comes to our program meetings each month. And she is really a great voice for the program because she went through it with two of her children. And now she's moved on and she works with us through her current position with the health department.
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like you're definitely getting that voice. Has that been helpful? Is that a thing that has changed the direction of what you guys are doing? Or has it solidified the direction of what you thought you should be doing? And or has that influenced that?
I think it's also in the back of our mind now. We're always thinking of our residents in every decision we make. They've kind of served as a reminder of us to think of the people that we serve as we're making decisions.
So when you look at the overall program of education, particularly in a housing authority, some amazing work that's going on. But if we gave you a magic wand, and that usually comes with funding, funding is usually the magic. Funding is usually the magic. We got some great ideas, but how about some magic money wand fund? Yeah. So, but again, if you can make those changes, maybe not even, you know, not changing what you're doing because it sounds like good stuff, but what are your needs or where do you see you going from this step on? So you've done this great work. You've got these great things in place. You see the challenges. Where would you guys like to see it go? Or what would you like to add to? Or maybe just like Lindsay said, just solidify things in such a way that you know you're going to get the results you're looking for. So, you know, what are your next steps or what are you dreaming of?
The biggest dream, and I think it's a dream for all service providers, is the fact that there's so many families out there that need assistance, but there's just not enough human capacity to go around. And so the dream would be that we just continue to grow and make sure that we have enough human capacity in order to remain doing the program, working with families. And then quite frankly, you know, the biggest dream would primarily end generational poverty because of what we're doing.
Right. No, absolutely.
So can I backtrack a little bit? I know you kind of briefly mentioned community partnerships and who you're working with in the community in terms of funding. So who else is involved in this work? You know, when you talk about connecting families, who are you guys working with? Are you working with anyone else or is it primarily you're in besides funding for?
There are a few organizations that we really do work directly with. For example, our maternal depression program as part of the Early Childhood Initiative. We have a strong partnership with a local organization called Child Guidance and Family Solutions, where they're facilitating the maternal depression groups, while our partnership with the YMCA and others, such as our local libraries, are working with the children in a different room while the groups are being facilitated with the moms. So that's a direct partnership that we have. You know, every month we have what we call family outreach events, where we have multiple community partners that are engaged in the early childhood area, or whether it's educationally, whether it's through the school systems within the geographical location that we serve. They're always at those events with tables and giveaways and information, registering families for kindergarten. And so that could range from 20 to 40 organizations, depending on the month and who is available. We have another partnership with our Akron Children's Hospital, who also provide safety programming and services to our families, including free car seats and pack and plays. So when our home visitors are going into the homes and recognize or triage that mom and or dad do not have a car seat or a pack and play for their child to safely sleep, we work with Akron Children's Hospital, and typically if it's there, as far as the inventory is there, they will turn around and provide our family with a free car seat or pack and play. We work with Head Start and other local preschool agencies to make sure that making sure that our families and our kids are having a smooth transition from preschool into kindergarten, and really work with our families to make sure that they have all of their paperwork completed. We also have, you know, as an agency, which our home visitors always make referrals to, 50 area organizations that we have formal partnerships with that we maintain to ensure that our families have access to the right services, ranging from basic needs all the way up through financial literacy, homeownership opportunities, services such as that.
That's awesome. You have such a wide range of partnerships. And I think that those in developing partnerships and the resources that you're bringing to families really can be a way to build and maintain that trust as you think about not being a service provider that comes in and says, well, here's what we offer to everyone because it's who we're partnered with. Mm-hmm. But instead being able to like actually tailor resources and needs to specific families. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that says to families like, okay, you actually listen to me. You're actually listening to what I need, not what you think I need, but what I actually need, you know, and that's such an important part of building those relationships is actually being able to connect people with those things that they need.
So when you talk about all these different things that you provide, and exactly what Lindsay said is, when you're providing those things and you're listening to their needs, and again, it's not a cookie cutter approach, but we're here to serve you. And, you know, and that's what you hear from people is like, nobody's listening, or I need this, I don't need that. And by having that, you know, you do that. But what are some of the challenges to trust you guys have come across? You know, in other words, we know you're doing great things and people respond to that, but what are some of those challenges that you've seen is, you know, that you bump up against to make sure you gain the trust of that family or that mom or even a group, perhaps?
The hardest part is just getting into the door. Mm-hmm. I think it takes us a long time to build relationships, to even get them to allow us into their home. So for that, we make our home visitors a friendly face in the neighborhood.
What you just touched on there, I think, is a really important part of building trust, especially in organizations where, you know, we do have a lot of background information on families because we take intake forms and we know a lot about people's personal lives that is not necessarily relevant to their child, but we know because we're in positions where we've gathered that information. And that can be a huge barrier to trust, because especially for somebody who's had an experience with an organization that has not dealt with that information well or judged them based on something that's not related to what they're coming in for, all of these, like there's a huge barrier of trust to overcome in those specific organizations. So it's not easy, the work that you guys are doing.
Well, that is amazing. You guys have an amazing story, and I think one that people can definitely learn from. And we appreciate so much you guys being on the show today, the work that you're doing in all facets, and the chance for all of us to learn kind of all the good things that you're doing there and how we can even replicate that sometime.
This podcast has been a collaboration between Parents as Teachers National Center and Strong Fathers, Strong Families, LLC. To learn more, visit us at either www.parentsasteachers.org or www.strongfathers.com. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook